got that nerd rage. Nerd rage. I got that nerd rage. Nerd rage.
From comics and games to movies and TV, this is the Nerd Show on 1310 KFKA.
Nerd rage.
Nerd rage.
Now here are the nerds.
Hello, everyone. Happy holidays. You're listening to The Nerd Show on 103.1 and 1310 KFKA, Northern Colorado's voice here in the Allo Communications studios with Scott Magerflesh, Michael Kilpatrick, and me, Nick Kenny. We also are known as
Darth Monger.
Darth Ambivalous.
Darth Harmonic.
And I got all the names right that time.
You did.
Wow, it only took me...
Fantastic.
A while. It took that me was a weird. While. Oh my gosh, we have a lot to discuss, like the ending of the Peripheral.
Oh, jeez.
Wow, so good.
Yeah, after my third viewing, I think I've at least kind of understood where we're at, and I figured it out.
Oh my gosh.
At least the ending.
I'm still confused.
Well, I will fix that for you.
You explain it to me. I'll stay in this ball of confusion.
His confusion. And I don't know what else we're going to talk about. Oh, yeah, we got some DC news.
A lot of DC news. I really want to get into that later on in the show because there is a ton that has come out in the last 4 or 5 days, and it is all over the board.
We'll get into that later. But first,
some of it's good news.
I wrote two dad jokes today. One's kind of nerdy. All right. You guys have to rank them too on how bad they are. First of all, I'll do the non-nerdy one first. How does Santa Claus drink his water?
I don't know.
With the hose.
Okay.
I don't know about that one.
Oh, well. All right, now second one. This is a Stranger Things joke. Dad joke. Brought to you by Nick Kenny. All right. When Eleven gave her Christmas list to... Oh my gosh, I'm spacing on his name. No, it's not the joke, Mike.
I know that, but that's kind of...
To Hopper.
Okay.
When L11 gives her Christmas list to Hopper, and there are some outrageous items on that list, what did Hopper say?
I'm almost afraid to ask.
Noel.
Okay, that was good.
Okay,
Go Broncos.
As far as dad jokes go, those are pretty good.
See?
But you know...
Don't quit my day job.
Okay, so the first one.
Well, maybe you should and then get a different one.
The first one was good, okay? The first one was good. The first one was bad. The second one was good.
Oh, come on. The hose was all right.
The hose was okay.
Well.
Yeah?
Well.
Yeah, phrasing. Phrasing.
All right, let's dive right in to what I consider to be one of the best shows of the year. Captivating, entertaining, great casting.
Excellent acting.
Yeah, absolutely.
Oh, yeah.
Was The Peripheral on Amazon Prime. And I finally watched the finale. Oh, my gosh, it was just incredible. Watched it a couple of times.
Yep.
Wow. Just brilliant, original storyline. We don't get a lot of those shows nowadays, and this year... We've been pumped out with quite a few, and I loved The Peripheral from start to finish. This just got better and better and better.
Yeah, I just have started the book. So it's interesting because obviously there was a book behind this, and that was what they did. And there's actually three books supposedly in the trilogy. There's a second one that's out, I believe. Third one that hasn't been released yet. So this is fairly new, but they did a great job. I'm already seeing some minor differences in the story arc between what was written and what was on TV. Nothing that is going to hurt it in any way, shape, or form, at least so far from what I've read, but it's been good. But the acting, and I know Mike has said it several times earlier, you know, in previous shows about how good the acting has been, and it is just absolutely phenomenal. I mean, if this show does not get nominated for a ton of, you know, made-for-TV series, you know, awards, I don't know what we're missing, but that was phenomenal.
What I like about the direction, looking at the lead, Chloe Grace Moritz's character and her brother, you know, he does a lot of things just on his own because he is experienced in you know, war and battle, and they get a little tenuous in their relationship a bit, but they're so, I don't know how to say it. They're siblings. You'd expect more arguments, more fighting, more defiance, but they don't do that. I mean, they've cared for their mother who's been sick, getting this tragic news, and all of a sudden, people from the future are attacking them and wanting to take their lives, and they're just, it's just brilliant, and I love their chemistry together. I love their love for each other, and that goes also with you know, with all his friends, you know, who served with him in the military. It's just happy. It's a family. And just I'm flabbergasted because a lot of those actors I haven't known. The only one I'd known beforehand was Chloe Grace Moritz. And just tremendous casting and storytelling and on-screen chemistry from everybody.
And those characters, what's I think best about them is they feel so real. They feel like someone that you actually know. It's not just one or two of them. Everybody, they feel like a real person. Like, you watch Iron Man, and Iron Man feels like Iron Man. You know, he feels like a character. These characters feel like real people, like someone you might know, like a next-door neighbor. This is why this show is so good. It's not just the plot. It's everything about it. I mean, it's got to be in my top five favorite shows of the year.
We'll discuss that next week when Michael gives us his top 10 shows and movies of the year and his bottom 10, but that's just a little plug for next week's
show. That's a great teaser. So, well, and I think, you know, to Micah's point, they do a great job developing all these characters that you feel like you know. This feels very grounded in reality, and I like the fact that we pick it up in 2032 and we're seeing everything that's going on. And, of course, you know, just as a reminder, we get told and we understand now that this is a stub that is off of the original, you know, course of reality that the RI and the Kleps and the Mets are operating in currently. And so the things that are going on that went on in their past are not what's happening in this stub currently. And so they are learning from those things in order to try and, you know, either get better or make different changes or whatever else. And so we learn that, you know, Flynn and everybody else that she's around, they're living in essentially an alternate timeline than what the individuals that they're currently interacting with are.
Because in her original timeline, she marries Tommy.
Yeah, she marries Tommy. Her brother doesn't come back from the war. They don't have the haptics. That doesn't happen for 10 years.
Mm-hmm. Connor doesn't get his limbs blown off.
Connor survives. You know, he comes back from the war, but, you know, his brother, you know, her brother doesn't. And so there's all these elements that really play into this, which makes the rest of the story interesting. And you try and figure that out, which is also a key because I kind of figured out how the ending is able to happen the way it happens. And so that's where we're getting to that point. So it's just crazy to see that, but to understand kind of the mind job that's being done to these people going, look, you're. And I loved it the last episode when Flynn is talking to, is it Eve? And says, you know, we don't mean anything to you, do you? Do we? We're just fictional characters. But, you know, they are really living a life that is a different timeline than Eve or anybody else is familiar with. And so, therefore, they've kind of just blown them off. And the morality of that, I think, really gets to the crux of some of the challenges you have with it.
When I love, I mean, it took me a while to fully understand that show. You know, the three heavy players you have in the future in London, the Kleps, which, you know, in that post-credit scene got even more convoluted and interesting.
Oh, yeah, that was weird.
And that's, of course, running by, you know, whatever that guy is.
Yeah.
Wearing paisley all the time. Always wearing paisley. And then you have the Metropolitan Police.
The Met, yep.
And they're, I think, you know, the good guys. I'd be interesting to see what happens in future seasons with them and get introduced to the chief inspector type of thing. And then, of course, the RI. And that doctor will do anything at any cost as we see them trying to hunt down Flynn. And then the Neoprims, who are kind of like the underdogs, what's her name, who they've been looking for the entire season.
Alita,
yeah. And I loved how they found her, you know, of just that kind of connection. It was kind of like a Da Vinci Code type of discovery where, oh, yeah, it's not a place. It is a place. It's just, you know, not an actual physical building.
Right.
Wow. And just how, and I'm still trying to figure out, how did she have her younger self there also?
Well, that was a peripheral.
Oh, yeah.
That's another peripheral, and that was where
they had from her.
Gone through all of that. And so she was piloting that peripheral, but she was having to use the headset because she had taken out her implant. But that was that whole element. And that's where, if you really want to get down to brass tacks, that's what the data is that the RI and the CLEPS want, the RI wants to keep away, is that all of the data that the RI has done in managing and manipulating these stubs across that is damaging, including the suppression that they've done where they came and wiped out, you know, the CLEPS were a part of that, where they wiped out, you know, 5 million people, mm-hmm. you know, in London
overnight.
Alone. Yeah, overnight in London alone. And nobody remembers that. Nobody knows yeah. that. And so that manipulation of history, you know, we talk about in Star Wars, you know, and I'm making a correlation here, how, you know, it's 20 years after the Clone Wars and nobody even knows who the Jedi Knights are. And you're like, well, what? That seems kind of crazy. But here we're seeing
revisionist
that.
History.
Yeah, revisionist history, mm-hmm. where they literally are making all these people not remember what happened to them that was so horrific. It's almost like if you could eliminate the Holocaust. Mm-hmm. And I know that, you know, that gets into a whole different level of discussion that we're not going to get here. But it's almost like if 10 years later, you know, the Nazis had won the war and they figured out a way, we're just going to make everybody forget about the Holocaust. You didn't even know what happened. That's sort
winner,
of what we're talking
yeah,
about
Yeah, the
here.
Winner history is written by the winners, yep. mm-hmm. that whole thing.
Yeah. Mm. And so we're seeing that. And it's crazy, but it's a great just story arc. And it keeps you guessing and keeps you wondering who's going to do what where. And the line between who's good and who's bad in this is not defined at all.
And no. what the RI is doing is they're trying to create better people who aren't violent. They're trying to yeah. stop basically another jackpot. They don't want violence. So what she is doing, I can't remember her name. I don't have my research in front of me. But
the doctor?
Yeah, the doctor is doing. She's trying to manipulate people into being better. But when you do that, you take away people's freedom.
Mm-hmm.
But you take away humanity. It's,
yeah.
it's, I think we talked about it kind of with Firefly, is if there's no, I mean, what you just become numb. You're like all those imaginary people that are walking around in those scenes, and when mm-hmm. they, you know, erase them from yeah. the, it's what is even the point of life at that point? And I think that's what I'm trying to still understand about the, what are they trying to accomplish? I mean, other than world peace, I use that with air quotes, but you know, what other agendas are there other than creating their perfect environment? And what does that look like? Because we only get to see the doctor really in this RI.
Yeah.
And
she may be the, I'm just wondering if she's one of the very few real people.
Well, and that's the thing with this show too, is who's real and who's not.
Yeah.
And I think I love that aspect too. It just keeps you, and I think that teaser at the end too with the CLEPS, because they want that information. They want the RI. It was interesting that they bring in the Met, you know, in the last couple of episodes. Yeah. I liked that twist quite a bit. But, you know, the what's going on there? Where is this guy's dad, and why is he meeting with these three Russians? Why are they always Russian?
I don't really know.
That opens up another can of worms. But yeah. We have so much more to talk about with the peripheral and that ending. And also we have to talk about Jasper, and that's the decision he made. Woo! Wow.
Yeah.
Lots to talk about with the peripheral. Stay tuned for more of the Nerd Show. We'll be right back. Welcome back to the Nerd Show, 103.1 and 1310 KFKA. We're here talking about The Peripheral, the latest hit series on Amazon Prime. Whew. All right, we got a little bit into the CLEPS and Lev and other...
Yeah. Well, then you asked about Jasper.
Oh, Jasper.
Let's talk about that.
Wow. It was, you know, so Jasper is the nephew of... what's his name? Corbell Pickett?
Yep.
You know, that drug kingpin and his power, who really runs the town. And at the end of the penultimate episode, we see Tommy put some holes in the sheriff and then use his doodad.
Yeah.
I love how we called it the doodad.
Yeah.
That's the name of the episode, too.
Yeah.
To take down Corbell, but Corbell ended up living and having a pulse. And, of course, Tommy's, well, we don't
a little
know
nervous about that, yeah.
There. But Jasper was just getting overrun by those other three thugs. Mm-hmm. He was still going to be the errand boy. And, you know, Jasper, in that flashback where Corbell murdered all those, that biker gang to clean up the town, take away the competition,
yep.
you know, you always assume, and plus he just looks like a villain too. Looks kind of snivelly. But Billy Ann loves him because he wouldn't hurt a fly, you know, and you get that kind of backlash to him for that Monopoly game he mentions.
Yeah.
About, you know, how she basically called him weak.
Yeah.
And then he parked that SUV, locked in his drunk friends on the railroad tracks. And then his conversation, I mean, that was powerful, where his wife tells him, you know, you would never hurt a fly. You know, that's why I married you. And then he's got them lined up to all be killed.
Well, and let's step that back a couple notches. Realistically, he's doing this because he thinks he's going to impress his wife, that he's going to be able to say, do you remember that conversation? And what he's really hoping for is for her to say, yeah, you know, you need to stand up for yourself. You need to be tough. You need to take action. You need to take the lead. That's what he was looking for in that situation. He was expecting her to give him that, basically that approval, that acknowledgement. So then he could say, well, I have just done something that is going to make sure that we don't put ourselves in, we're not in any danger. I'm not being, you know, taken advantage of again. That was how that was supposed to go. But she's just like, no, I, you know, I love your heart and you wouldn't hurt anybody. And it just, it flips the switch on him. And then when he goes, you know, I almost made a horrible mistake. And now it, he actually does.
It happened. Yeah.
And it does happen. And those individuals die, which, you know, could actually create some benefit for him.
Or does he go down a dark path in future seasons and become like his uncle?
He could.
I mean, I can't imagine the PTSD that he's going to have after, oh, no, she's not impressed. And I love that. Yeah, that's a great connection there. And then that's what happened.
Will he
and,
tell her? Is he going to tell her at all?
I don't. Yeah.
I think he keeps it to himself.
I think you're right. I think that's going to be one of those where, you know, she will ask what happened and he will probably spin that story that he let those guys, you know, drive home, knowing full well that they would never make it home. And, you know, so that I think he may spin that yarn a little bit so that he will have some guilt and he can share that with her, but not along the same context of what actually happened.
I think that's going to eat away and that's going to be an interesting story arc to see. I going in, I'm just with an interjection. It's amazing to me how many police are present at the murder scene of Corbell and the sheriff. It just seems in a small town like that, they have a lot of police department there. Well, and with all this murder that's going on, you think you'd see them a little more frequently in the show, but that's just enough.
And I think you're seeing the sheriff's office, and then you've got like the state police or something else. I think that's why they were wearing blue instead of the brown to try and differentiate that they were from different parts of, you know, either state police or something else, because you're dealing with the sheriff.
So. Yeah, and you don't want to, you don't necessarily want the sheriff's office dealing with the murder of the sheriff. You often want an outside source.
Internal affairs and such. Wow. All right, well, let's go back to...
Well, what about Flynn?
Well, yeah, I mean, and at the ending, holy cow.
I mean, you... Yeah, so...
So she... And she's so bright, and she is so non-reactionary. She has ideas. She's talking to, of course, the Metropolitan Police gal about creating another stub, and if that's possible.
Yep.
She's like, I don't know. I
mean, well, what the Met tells her is that you can. She can't do it, but she knows she would know how and where you would go about doing that. And so let's dig into this. So when Flynn... Interperforal goes back and she takes over essentially that new stub facility. What we see is we see the primary timeline that they are currently on, and then we see the stubs that are being created. All right.
And had been. That's kind of cool.
Yeah. And so you've got all these different elements, you know, across these timelines and these stubs that they've created to do different things. She finds the one that she's on. And you see the point, it kind of comes off to the side, it comes off to the right-hand side. And so basically you're talking in 2021, 2022 is when they first intervened. That's where the haptics happened, that's where everything else started. So that created the stub. And they said every time someone from the future interacts with someone from the past, you know, for the first time, then it creates that new stub. And so what she essentially did is before Connor kills her, she goes back in some way, shape, or form and interacts with herself before she dies. And she creates a new stub. So she's essentially operating in a stub off of a stub. And because she broke the clock, the RI has no way to track her.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they don't know the coordinates.
Where'd she get that clock, though?
Well, that was part of the original part of when she walked in. So if you remember, she had
to
beat up the guard. She gets into the the mausoleum, goes down the steps. There's the stopwatch. And I'm hoping that in the book we will get some elements of figuring out, you know, what all those things represent. She kind of talked about that was the key, and then she was able to put it on the table and then get the overall timeline. And then by her crushing it, she eliminates the ability for her to be tracked in whatever this new stub is, so they can't go back and find her. So it'll be interesting to see how they play that out. But that's how she's able to essentially do the reboot. And because they can't find her, they don't know where to go get her. And by her dying in the original stub, the RI and everybody else is going to leave her timeline alone. So that stub basically will just continue on into, you know,
foreverness
in a different alternate timeline. She's created a third, if we want to think about it in what we're aware of, a third timeline that she's now operating in where she's still alive. And now they're trying to figure out what's going on, but they don't have the ability to interact with her, what would be her future moving forward.
Do you think they're going to return to the timeline that we spent the most time in this season with Burton, with Connor, with essentially Connor assumingly killing Flynn, or is that done? Is that part
no?
Of the story
I think
done?
It's done because we're going to spend most of our time probably in the next season, and if we get into the next book, and again, I don't know where the first book
why
ends.
Why have all these cliffhangers?
Yeah, well, you wouldn't have the Jasper story then. I think
because
you might. Yeah,
we don't know where she creates that stub.
Oh yeah, because it could be right.
And we also don't know what courses of action are going to continue along the current path that they're on in this new stub. Because you think about it, and this is where this whole element becomes really brilliant, that there are elements that were set in motion before she creates this stub that probably aren't going to go away. You know, so you've got Tommy asking about, you know, the threat on the nuclear power plant. You know, how far back is she going to restart this new stub? Is it before that happened, before the RI intervened, or after?
Mm-hmm.
And then is she going to have to do something to help set that? And I don't know if she had enough time to figure out the best place to go out and create this new stub. She just kind of set it up and ran with it. I think she thinks she knows what she's doing, but overall, we don't know. And the implications of what's started on the stub that we're on that are going to carry over into the new secondary stub, we're just not sure either. So I think anything's possible.
I love this show. I love the discussions we're having about this. It's difficult to predict what will happen in season two because of this timeline of these stubs. It's really unlike Loki. I mean, it's similar to Loki with those timelines you see branching off, but it's not Loki, you know? And oh my gosh, I can't wait for season two.
Well, and I think what's going to be weird for me is figuring out, it's almost like we're moving, time is moving at the same pace and rate in all these different timelines. And we've gone back in time and we've created this. So now what happens when we go back from a timeline and we go back even further? Are there elements that, you know, we're going to be able to figure out? And we're seeing things play out in new stubs almost at the same rate and progression as the current time. So that could play into it a little bit as well, that it's going to be really, really weird and strange how these things can play out. But love it so far.
If you're looking for a great story to watch over the holiday break, The Peripheral on Amazon Prime. You will not be disappointed. And we'd love to know your thoughts. Anyway, stay tuned for more of The Nerd Show. We're going to talk some DC news right after this break. Welcome back to The Nerd Show on 103.1 and 1310 KFKA in the Allo Communications studios. We've been talking about The Peripheral, loving The Peripheral. I'm going to say The Peripheral one more time.
Okay. Go ahead.
I guess I just said it one more time.
You did.
The Peripheral.
Do you want to say it one more time?
Nope, I'm good.
Okay. Are you sure? All right.
Well, a lot of news coming out from the DC universe this week that we can really dive into. Oh, also, just a special shout out to the 20th anniversary of The Lord of the Rings, The Two Towers, that happened this past Sunday. 20 years since that movie came out.
Yeah.
Wow. I love that trilogy.
There was some little bit of online mocking with Carl Urban and his role in that, but that was kind of funny.
Ah, I didn't see that.
Just a couple of things that are like, wow, this guy has really done a lot in the last 20 years, and think about where he was then. So,
yeah. He was in Ragnarok, right? As Dez?
Yes.
As the goofy guy?
Yes, he was. But he's, you know, my favorite current to date is Billy Butcher in The Boys. He is just
A
sick and twisted individual.
Crap. I'm going to have to really start expanding my top 10 list. Hang on.
Oh, he just thought about that.
Right now it's a top 14 list.
There you go. So, but yeah, DC... It's been a mess in the last few weeks, and I think they're in a little bit of damage control. But, you know, we talked about it last week. We talked a little bit about Patty Jenkins and some of the things that we had heard. Turns out that some of that isn't true, and she actually came out on her own and made a statement about all the things that are going on between, you know, Lucasfilm and Rogue Squadron and Wonder Woman and all the other things. And so that, I think, is actually the best news of everything that we've seen out of DC as of late. But, you know, in this past week, we had, you know, Dwayne Johnson stop following the Black Adam Instagram page, stop following Warner Brothers page. We had Henry Cavill come back and say, oh, by the way, I'm not going to be back as Superman, even though that was teased at the end of Black Adam. Mm-hmm.
And they did say he had a very positive meeting with James Gunn, but James Gunn wants to go.
Yeah.
A different direction.
They're going to go a different direction.
Wah, he had
also shot a cameo for The Flash that isn't going to be used. Mm. So they're making that.
And
really
Wonder Woman's cameo was also cut out.
Yep. And they're trying to figure that. Well, part of that, and again, going back to what Patty Jenkins came out and said, is that I was really excited when they tapped her to do Rogue Squadron. Mm-hmm. And if you remember that teaser trailer that we saw a few years ago was literally her... You know, on a blacktop, she's changing into a flight suit. She's in the back of her car. She's talking about growing up and being around planes and everything else. And then all of a sudden you realize she's putting on an X-Wing jumpsuit.
Mm-hmm.
And she grabs an X-Wing helmet. She walks down the runway and there's an X-Wing. And everybody lost their mind. And what it turns out is that story and that development has just taken longer than what they had anticipated. And when she was supposed to go back and work on Wonder Woman 3, she went to Lucasfilm and just said, look, I can't do both, and I've committed to this. I'm going to have to walk away. And based on what she posted, Lucasfilm said, go do what you need to do. It'll be here when you're ready.
Mm-hmm.
So they left the door wide open to her, gave her a great opportunity to do that. They went back, started working on Wonder Woman, and now there's a changing of the guard. There's all these things going on, and based on her... They need to get stuff figured out before she can really start moving forward with anything on Wonder Woman 3. Really still wants to be a part of the project. Didn't say she was stepping away. So I think out of all the stuff we've heard out of DC in the last few days, that's the most positive for me, that we still might see her do Wonder Woman 3. We might see Gal Gadot.
I would love to see Gal Gadot.
Oh, yeah. I think
she was Wonder Woman.
She was. And having the Linda Carter cameo at the end of the second one, I thought was the best part of that whole movie. So I'd love to see them continue down that path. So
well, there wasn't a lot of good in that movie.
Yeah, it
was a stinker.
Yeah, it could have been better. But that's kind of the latest on DC.
Well, I hope that doesn't... If DC is dragging its feet with Wonder Woman, I hope they can move Rogue Squadron up a bit and she can have that opportunity, because that was just a thrilling trailer and a teaser. Yeah, not a trailer, a teaser a couple of years ago. And with what Star Wars has been producing lately, oh my gosh. We have 4 live-action series coming out next year alone. 4! Oh, it's a good time to be a nerd. So what's going on with Dwayne Johnson? You know, when he brought in Henry Cavill, it almost seemed like in the accusations from DC was it was Dwayne Johnson's choice to bring back Henry Cavill as Superman, and that DC hadn't really authorized it. And
I don't believe that that's true, because what Henry Cavill came out and said, and he was alluding to this also in what he posted, and he referenced the meeting that he had with James Gunn, and that it was positive, was that he was asked by Warner Brothers executives to announce that he was back as Superman, that it was a part of this, and that he had done the cameo for Black Adam. He did the cameo for Flash, and this was supposed to be that resurgence that he's coming back. And then when they hired James Gunn, they did an about face. And so,
yeah, James Gunn was hired right after the cameo.
Yeah, I mean, so the timing makes sense. And I think they're all playing nice with one another. I think the thing that's frustrating for me as a fan is that this, you know, knee-jerk shift and we're going to reboot and we're going to redo things over and over and over again. I just think it's starting to water down the environment, and you're getting to a point where I'm starting to not care.
Well, and yeah, and what if they do this with the MCU, and it becomes, instead of the MCU, it becomes the MU. Everything that we've watched since 2008 is basically irrelevant, because what's happening now is what's really relevant. And all the stuff in the first three really great phases and the mediocre fourth phase, it just doesn't matter anymore. I think you're absolutely right. But DC has to do this, because they have absolutely botched their cinematic universe. So I think James Gunn has to do it. I'm sad to see Cavill go. I'm sorry to see him go. I don't want to see Gal Gadot go. I don't want to see Jason Momoa go. But if they have to cut ties with some people that I like, well, then let it happen, because you've got to save the franchise.
Well, they got to let the fans know. That's one thing that Disney's been really good at. I mean, with Star Wars, with the MCU, is, hey, here's our 5-year plan. And then they lay it out there. And some things will shift and change around a bit. But you get to see where they're headed. You get excited about some things. You question others. But as far as I've seen, DC hasn't done that. And them just teasing Superman's return, I thought was pretty cool, because I really enjoyed that Superman movie. And for them to do an about faces, you know, if you're going to scrap it, scrap everything and start from scratch. But I think this back and forth and back and forth, you're going to lose even casual fans.
I think that's what they're doing. They're starting from scratch now, especially with this young Superman movie. And I don't know who the younger Superman is going to be.
Sheldon Cooper. Maybe like young Sheldon.
Yeah.
Oh, I don't. That's just. I don't know either. And I want to be excited for it, because I liked. Overall, Black Adam, I liked the action sequence. I didn't care for the human aspect, kind of like with Transformers. Didn't care for the humans, but loved the superhero aspect of it. But I've, ever since the Dark Knight trilogy, haven't been sold on much of DC.
Except for the Batman.
The Batman was pretty good.
The Batman was
But again, really it was, good. You know, it's like another stub of another Batman series. We have four renditions of Batman now, it seems. Well, we do.
Well.
If not more.
And only because you just mentioned it, we also have the new Transformers Beast Wars, or whatever it's called, coming out. So
I haven't even seen that.
Yeah, that trailer has dropped. And
I saw the first two movies, and I'm like, you know what? It's okay.
I'm most upset that Mirage is in this one. It's in the trailer prominently, and apparently he's a Porsche.
Ah.
I don't like that.
We're going to console Scott as we take this break. We'll be back as Micah and Scott will discuss Wednesday. And
Wednesday.
It is Wednesday.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, we're going to discuss what we did today.
Yeah.
Stay tuned for more of the Nerd Show. We'll be right back.
Welcome back to the Nerd Show, coming to you from downtown Greeley in the Owl Communications Studios. This is Scott. Nick has left the building. He has not done his homework. He did not catch up on Wednesday. And so we have booted him from the studio, said, you can't talk about this anymore since you know nothing about it. And Mike and I are going to take over for the last segment.
And also, he doesn't want to get any spoilers. By the way, that was Danny Elfman. I love the fact that they kept the harpsichord sound.
Yeah.
And I don't think they had the harpsichord in the original, but the harpsichord is what Lurch plays.
Lurch plays, yep.
And it's such a Danny Elfman theme.
Yeah.
But it kind of connects the old Addams Family to Wednesday.
Mm-hmm.
And that's one thing that I really was hoping that they would do, is they would connect it musically.
Yeah, they did a great job with that. But
Lucky. And they did it. They did that too, because at one point she snaps her fingers. Snap, snap.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and it was that was a funny tie-in.
I think I did that. I think I screamed, "Oh my god!"
Because we see that, you know, they're creepy and they're kooky, all together spooky, all together ooky. The Addams Family. Dun 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 dun. Yeah, so it's kind of cool.
So you're all caught up.
Yes, I am all caught up. I watched the final episode. I have to say, there were some moments in that last episode of Wednesday that it was a little bit of shock value that whatever they were playing, they did a great job with. I mean, what's the pilgrim guy that everybody loves, or, you know, that the town is based off of?
Yeah.
Starts with a C.
That weirdo.
Oh, I'm trying to remember. But anyways, when they resurrect him from the dead after we figure out that the normie teacher from Nevermore University is actually the one that is the long-lost daughter.
Christina Ricci's
character, which I thought was a great twist, the way they did that.
I never trusted her. Yeah. I never trusted her.
Yep.
She was too much
of a goody two-shoes.
Well, what I liked about the show is I'm looking at every character. I'm like, I don't like that character. I don't trust her. I don't like that character. I don't trust him. And it turns out that a lot of them are good, but a lot of them are actually bad. So I don't know. I loved the twists and turns in this show. And I liked the fact that they made Christina Ricci bad, because she's the original good Wednesday.
Yeah.
The best Wednesday. She is Wednesday.
Yeah, no, she did a fantastic job. I actually saw a meme today, and it was so funny. It was a couple houses, like, on a beachfront, and there was one that was all done in neon colors, and it was and I can't remember her roommate's name. I'm blanking on it right now. The young blonde werewolf that wolfs out in the last episode. But it was that house, and then the house
Enid.
It was Enid, and then the house next to it was, like, all black and gray, and that was Wednesday, and I thought that was pretty telling. But I like the way they did it. When she gets stabbed in the crypt, when Wednesday gets stabbed, I was like, what in the world? And where is this going? Are you going to kill the title character on the last episode?
They can't kill Wednesday. She's too powerful.
No, but still, you've got to admit, I don't know about you, but I kind of had I caught my breath for a moment when that happened. I'm like, where are they going with that?
So I'm going to be honest. I actually don't remember that part.
What?
I don't remember that part. I really don't.
Oh, my gosh.
What happened then?
Well, she uses Wednesday's blood because she needs her alive in order to resurrect
the original pilgrim in the crypt.
And she goes to the supernatural and he gets resurrected. And she's sitting there or standing there next to him and she's playing her normal tough. And the guy just stabs her and they leave her to die. And then Goody, her long-lost ancestor, comes and visits her as a ghost and then says, I can save you. You need my power to save you, but you'll never see me again. And so then she survives.
What a goody two-shoes.
Yeah. And I love the way they did that even. So before we get to that point where you find out, you know, how she gets her to confess, because she gets the principal to shapeshift to look like, is it Tyler, the guy from the coffee shop?
Maybe.
Or Tanner or something like that, yeah.
I have to look up the full cast.
Yeah, I should have had
Tyler
from it. Yeah, it was Tyler. But it was like,
I didn't like him. He just did.
Yeah, he was a little too, he was trying way too hard to be friends with Wednesday, although you could kind of get into it. That was some of the teen angst that.
Although the therapist was someone I did not trust from the beginning.
Either. And the fact that she was innocent. You know, I mean, she was literally just doing her job. And, you know, the way that Wednesday had, you know, spun a yarn that it all made sense, but that wasn't what was going on. And it kept changing.
So I'm actually glad that they did that, because I don't want them to make teenagers make the therapist the bad person.
Yeah.
Because, like, a lot of kids nowadays kind of have mental health issues. So I don't want people to make the therapist the bad guy.
Yeah. But
I'm glad that they made the therapist not evil.
Yeah. It made sense.
good rope-a-dope.
Yeah, it was. They did that multiple times where you're like following along with what Wednesday's saying. You know, the one thing I didn't appreciate about the show is I thought the whole story arc with Uncle Fester was just a complete throwaway.
And he was not a good Uncle Fester.
No.
So he was not a good Uncle Fester. I didn't like Fred Armisen as Uncle Fester. I didn't like Catherine Zeta-Jones as Morticia. And I did not like Luis Guzman as Gomez. And maybe it's because I like the cast from the movies
so much.
You were
just so hung up on the cast from the movies that you loved them.
They were great.
They were great.
Three legendary actors. And their story arcs weren't great in this. I don't know.
Yeah.
And Wednesdays, they should have stuck with Wednesdays. Yes, she has the teen drama. I understand that was going to happen. But that extra stuff with the rest of the family was just kind of it really brought it down.
Well, and it was sort of like we had to tell the early story of, you know, Morticia actually being the one who killed the boy that Gomez was, you know, accused of and then was cleared of and all the other stuff. And it felt like that we were...
Let's go on a tangent that I don't want to go on.
Let's create some filler. This to be a 8 or 10 episode series when it really could have been maybe a 6 episode series and would have been just as good, if not better.
Yeah, it's like that episode 7. You know how every show has that episode 7 before episode 8, where episode 7 just kind of goes on a tangent, and then episode 8 is the finale.
Yeah.
Except this was like 5 and 6, where they were just kind of throwaways and. Eh.
Yeah. It didn't do the story any good, and I think it detracted from what was already a really great cast and set of characters that we could have spent just a tiny bit more time learning about as opposed to having to go through all the other stuff. So,
are we going to give this the Nerd Show stamp of approval?
You know, I think that we should. I enjoyed it tremendously, so I would definitely give it a thumbs up.
Nerd Show stamp of approval.
Well, there we go, everybody. Well...
Before we go,
this
is actually, this was Jenna Ortega playing the cello. She didn't record this but she was actually playing it. She trained for 3 months to play the cello, so
that's
kudos
fantastic.
To her.
Good for her. That is fantastic. Well, such great stuff all the way around. Well, happy holidays to everyone. We hope you have a wonderful, hopefully you get a few days off of work, you get to enjoy it, make sure you share the best gift that you could give anybody around, which is the knowledge of the Nerd Show on the radio and on Spotify and on iTunes and all the other places that you can download your favorite podcasts. Have a wonderful week, everyone. We'll see you around and stay nerdy.
And go Broncos.